Hello, everyone. Welcome. Paul LaVie here. Welcome to Why Am I So Happy? I am so excited to share with you today. I have as my guest Mary Schaefer. Mary has a master's degree in human resources and is certified as a human resources professional. She lives and teaches empowerment and how to have productive manager-employee interactions. As a speaker, coach, and trainer, she focuses on making the most of what people at work can contribute to an organization through their energy and creativity, while at the same time meeting their own specific needs for meaningful work. Mary calls herself a Chief Encouragement Officer. I love that. I love that. In our discussion today, we'll talk about what it takes to revolutionize your workplace to be pro-human. First off, Mary, thank you and welcome to the show.
You're very welcome, Paula. I'm glad to be here.
Yay, and I'm so happy to have you here. I'm excited. Let's begin, Mary. Please share a bit of your history and what brought you on the path that you're on and the work that you do.
Yes, I'll make it brief, even though I'm going to start with the fact that I grew up on a farm.
Love.
And in working with my siblings and my father and, you know, other teens my age, I realized, now that I look back on it, that I was very concerned with the people aspect at work and gave my dad all kinds of unsolicited advice, you know, about how to handle performance management and that kind of thing. And even though my bachelor's is in computer science, once I got into corporate America, I realized I really did love working with people. Mainly what I learned through working with them with computers is people at that period of time were afraid of, like, breaking them and looking stupid. And I really loved helping them get over that and make them feel safe with me so they could get on and do their job. And so ultimately, I wanted to do that kind of work all the time, and the only place that really fit in corporate America was in HR. And that also, I found it interesting that a department that had the word human in its title, human resources, the people didn't always act that way, and I wanted to act that way. I wanted human resources to be human, which doesn't mean, you know, giving away the store, but treating people in as if I'm a human and as if they're a human too, while we're sometimes dealing with difficult issues. So thus, I pursued my master's in HR. My employer supported that, and for the last 7 years of my corporate career, I was in human resources, a human resources manager at an R&D facility with a Fortune 500 company, and decided I wanted to break out on my own and expand who I could help with this idea of bringing more humanity at work and what I call a pro-human workplace.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Would you say this subject, pro-human workplace, really is important to you personally?
It's terribly important to me. It's in fact why I got into human resources and why ultimately I left my corporate role, because, you know, it's not necessarily part of corporate culture, or they don't interpret it the way I do, at least. And I find it curious that, you know, we as citizens, or whether a corporation is a steward of an asset like a car, you know, we do all we can to make sure it can perform at the highest level. Yet when it comes to human beings, when they're, for instance, an employer's asset, it's almost as if we disdain or simply neglect what a human being needs. And this is all just not because I'm soft and squishy inside, as people would tell you. I'm not. I have great respect and believe we need to have preserve human beings' dignity and treat them in a way that makes people want to do better. I mean, there's a way to treat that asset also. And we are not treating people in a way that meets their needs so they can perform the best.
Yes. Yes. I agree. You call yourself a chief encouragement officer. I absolutely love that, Mary. Let's talk a few minutes about how important encouragement is and what it can do for the ones that are encouraging and the ones that are receiving that encouragement.
Yes. Well, fortunately, Paula, it comes naturally to me. Mm-hmm. To give encouragement. And I decided this early in my career when I realized I was being competitive and I didn't like the way that was showing up at work, and I realized there was enough for all of us. And so, like, when something crossed across my thoughts that, wow, so-and-so really did a good job with that presentation or really delivered that message well, I needed to say it. And so I got in the habit of saying it, okay?
Beautiful.
And then this just happened very recently to me within the past 6 months. In 1 week, I had a person say, wow, I need to hang around you more. Another person said, you always have a positive spin on things. And the other person said, you made me see this so much differently. It made me feel so much better about what we were talking about. And when I heard it like 3 times just in a few days, I'm like, people are not getting enough of this.
Yes.
You know, and it also made me feel so good that to me something very simple can make such a difference in a person's life. When I think of how people have encouraged me as recently as today, you know, how much it lifted my heart, lifted my spirit, lifted my energy, you know, that's just not soft stuff. That's real stuff.
Yes.
And why wouldn't we want more of that at work in particular?
Yes. I love it. I love it. Because really, you can see at times that the focus can be on, let's do this better, or this can be negative, or this, instead of, oh my gosh, what a good job you're doing. Oh, you're going to do so fantastic on this project. The encouragement and the positive can create so much.
It can. And I was just talking to someone about this recently. She had some criticism to give someone, and she wanted them to take it well. And what I always tell the managers that I coach is, your balance needs to be, I'm holding you accountable, but I'm on your side at the same time. And so as you're talking to them, for instance, I had someone tell me one time that I could give criticism and they wouldn't even know it happened. And the way I do that is, you know, I'm just going to give an example. You know, you and I have talked about your presentation skills recently, and, you know, I saw you in that meeting the other day, and I thought you did a great job of projecting your voice, and you were more engaged with the audience. Now, I don't know if you noticed on some of the slides you presented, some people I noticed sort of shut down because there was a lot of information on one slide, and I know you can hold a lot of information in your head at one time, and I would like to work with you on simplifying that because I don't want people to miss your really important message.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
And so what did you hear that I did with that, Paula?
Yes, you were encouraging, but yet bringing out the thought of what can we do better to have the audience learn and take in what you want to say, not lose them. But yet you were very, very encouraging and positive.
Yes. And I want to teach people that. I find it so easy. And I realize there are those things that are more difficult and people are going to take harder, but yet there's a way to maintain their dignity and also when you're giving people a really tough message, like, you know, your performance is in such a state that I'm putting you on probation. That's, you know, that's what they call it, or at work or whatever, or this is, you know, a first level around your own performance, you know, acknowledgement. Even that, I tell managers, leave them with hope and action. You know, I'm with you here, and here's what I think we should do going out of this meeting today. And just simply that, giving something for people to do, even after a difficult message to receive, gives them something to go do rather than just go ruminate.
Yes. Yes. I love it. I love it. That can make such a huge difference.
Yes.
For the employee, for the audience, the coworkers, the production. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Before we go into our commercial break, Mary, would you please share your contact information, your website with the listeners before we break for commercial?
Yes, Paula, I just made a customized link people can go to, and all you have to type in the domain bar up there at the top of your browser is tiny.cc/, and then this word is all run together. It's Mary Paula V.
Fun.
And it's all in lowercase, and that matters. And V is just the letter V for your last name. So tiny.cc/Mary Paula V, all one word.
Love it. That's fantastic, Mary. I love it. Well, with that, everyone, we are going to pop out for a moment, but I will be right back with Mary Schaefer. Mary, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. If you're just popping in, I am chatting with Mary Schaefer. She is sharing some absolute fantastic information about human resources, working in an environment with coworkers. She is a chief encouragement officer. I love it. Well, Mary, let's jump right back into the fun. Please share with us what are some of the obstacles to create a pro-human workplace, and how can we overcome them?
Yes, I am very glad you asked that question, because as you can imagine, there are plenty of obstacles. So, you know, one of them is simply the culture you're already working in. And so if it does not lend itself to that, you can sort of feel like the Lone Ranger in trying that. And so whether you're a manager or simply an employee who wants to make a difference, I want to encourage you to take care of yourself as you are trying out these behaviors or being more frequent with them, because, you know, it may or may not spread. It may feel like you're pushing a boulder uphill, as they say. And so when I say take care of yourself, it's making sure you do interact with people in whatever forum, in or outside of work, that does support what you believe in and how the changes that you want to make. One of the other obstacles I run into is we don't have time for that. Well, you have just as much time to deliver a message, period, as you do delivering it in an encouraging way. What you're telling me is perhaps you don't have time to learn that, which I would challenge companies or managers on, because there are statistics out there that prove that by treating people in a more human way, it can increase your return on investment thousands of times over, hundreds of times over, excuse me. A book by Raj Sisodia called Firms of Endearment talks about that if you want to get into that. Another obstacle I run into is managers who tend, they have sort of a judgmental side of them. So they think, well, I don't have to spare this person's feelings. They're just here for a job. Mm-hmm. And what I ask them to do after we talk it through for a while, and if they're really stuck there, I ask them, who do you want to be? What do you want to be known for? Who do you want to be? And a lot of them will say, well, I don't need to be liked. And I said, I know I don't need to be liked either, but you want to be respected enough that people will follow your lead and do good work for you. So it doesn't have to cost you anything. But some managers may have to do some more internal work than they were expecting in order to make these changes.
Yes, yes. And would you say it's not so much from a manager, the message, it's how they give that message? Because I would think when that message is given with respect and, you know, honoring that that is an employee, that employee will become more involved in their work and in their company, and the encouragement will increase their productivity and really make it more of a team in the whole scenario, would you say?
Well, absolutely true. And you're bringing me to one other point. I don't know if I would call it an obstacle, but different people have different skills.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've worked with engineers, scientists, and IT professionals my whole life, been an IT professional myself. And I know how they think. They tend to think, I'm stereotyping here, exaggerating this, tend to think linear and logically, and don't necessarily pay attention to how something is presented. And this also goes for people in all types of occupations. But I think we need to bring a little more emotional intelligence, because what you say is true. What I find even with my scientists, engineers, and IT professional clients, that they want to do differently, but they have to learn it. And I have to help them with the words, and we have to practice it. And, you know, they've been doing it one way for so long, it's just going to be difficult for them to shift. They get what you're saying. They just need to practice shifting how they say it.
Yes. Yes. I love it. I love it. What's one thing a person can do right now, Mary, to make their workplace more human?
I would say just the easiest thing, if you see a person doing something right or well or something they didn't have to do, make a remark about it. It's as easy as, this isn't even at work, but it's as easy as in the grocery store. You know, I saw a cashier, I was next in line, and she was dealing with a very difficult customer, and when he moved away, I just told her, you handled that really well.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't say anything, but I could tell by the look on her face, oh, she was like relieved, and also, wow, somebody saw me and acknowledged it. Even if I wasn't her boss, you know, she felt acknowledged. And that happens at work all day.
Yes.
You shouldn't have to look for it. If you make it a point to notice what someone is doing right, you can find it and mention it.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, and that gave her a bit of encouragement. It made her feel good, because from what you saw, I'm taking, is that she really made an effort to handle that situation in a very good manner. And she could have went different directions, but she made an effort to really handle that well. That was great.
Yes. And I often find that out in the world in retail, when I notice an employee handling something well, and it's subtle, and a lot of people wouldn't notice it, and I make it a point of telling them I noticed it, and you can tell they're thrilled.
Yes, yes. I was a longtime restaurant owner, and, you know, occasionally we would have a very difficult customer.
Mm-hmm.
I literally would... That would become my challenge, to turn that mood around and satisfy them and have them leave my restaurant feeling good. And I loved it. It really made me feel good when I would accomplish that. I could have got all irritated and said, well, you know, I'm going to ignore them. But I'm going to help them be happier. There's something going on. They're not in a good mood. I'm going to help them turn that around. And really, I had a lot of fun with that.
And, you know, one thing I would want to say about that, Paula, is people who struggle with that, I want to tell them, you can't give what you don't have.
Yes.
So work on what's going on your inside so you're capable of being magnanimous.
Yes.
You know, and shifting that mood. Because, Paula, you weren't able to do that except for the fact that you are already happy.
Yes.
As, you know, going from the title of your radio show.
Yes.
You were able to do that because you carry it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, good point. Excellent. With just a few more minutes left to go in the show, Mary, what last words would you like to share to the listeners today?
I would really like to encourage people to notice the things that I'm talking about more and recognize that you're not, it is very generous and magnanimous, as I said, and you're also doing yourself good because what you put out there comes back at you.
Yes.
And so, if you're more of a person who wants the data and or wants a formula, I would suggest not only Raj Sisodia's book, Firms of Endearment, but also looking into emotional intelligence, of which the five components are empathy, social skills, self-regulation, and motivation, and social skills. And maybe you need to brush up, you know, on one of those, or see that, oh, I haven't been making a difference because I haven't been paying enough attention here. And just look at yourself to see how you can become your own chief encouragement officer and then spread that.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Look at ourselves and be open to, okay, this is what I may be able to do differently or how I may be able to focus differently. And then that effect of what others relate to us, as you said, you know, and like creates like. I love that,
yes.
Mary.
Yes.
Yes, that is absolutely fantastic. I love it. I love it. Well, I'm just so happy to have had you on the show today, Mary. You really are an inspiration and what you do for others and for firms. So let me ask you, do companies, can they hire you? Are you also an inspirational speaker?
Yes. I do coaching, training, and public speaking, and I frequently do webinars. So, you know, you can hire me and we can do something over the internet, you know, don't even have to pay for my travel to come to you. And you'll find it all on my website about my offerings and the sort of topics I focus on, or I can customize something to your needs.
Fantastic. You are a great asset and inspiration to others, Mary. I just want to thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. I feel that, Paula.
Thank you. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us today. Big hugs to everyone and a happy day to everyone. Happy day to you, Mary.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Why Am I So Happy? Paula V here. I am thrilled to share with you today an amazing man, David Clark. David is the author and Different Strokes for Different Folks radio show host. He is a retired social worker, a recovered alcoholic, recovered sex addict. He has poured his years of intense experiences into Occam's Razor Revisited. He has also done so with his first novel, Shades of Grey. I am so excited to share you with everyone today, David, and I am thrilled that you are also a radio host. So to begin, welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so honored. Let's begin, David. Tell us, how did you make the transition to becoming a radio show host? What brought you into that path?
Well, it was an interesting segue. What happened was that I went back to a show I had done interviews with on before when I came out with Shades of Gay. It's not Shades of Gray.
Oh, that was, goodness.
That was the bestseller.
Mm-hmm.
And my book was about a recovering, well, about a sex addict and alcoholic who had to make a major decision on whether he was going to make a transition or continue to head down into the abyss. But I reached out to A.J. Mata, who had a radio show with his wife April, and asked if they would have me on. And April said that what they were doing, their focus at that time was promotion, and that she wanted to put him in touch with me. And when I spoke with him, he said, you know, you have the material for your own show. And I said, I do. And he went on and encouraged me to consider what I might do. And so I decided to conceive of a show that was framed around spirituality of all kinds. It's called Different Strokes for Different Folks, as you mentioned.
Yes.
And my premise is that there are many pathways to God. And so I welcome a diverse range of guests who may have different ideas on how to achieve enlightenment.
Yes.
So that's what I did. And I started doing that almost 3 years ago.
Oh, that is so fantastic. What is your show about, David? And what do you mean about finding common ground? What is that about?
Well, it's about coming to find how we can relate to each other instead of comparing ourselves. And so even if we have different opinions and different beliefs and different views, the idea is not to argue about those or to take soapbox stands about them, but find out where we can actually agree. And so that's what I mean by common ground.
I love that. I love that.
In other words, you know, learn to agree to disagree and find out where there is agreement and where there are common beliefs.
Yes. And respect each other and allow each other their own particular views. I love
that. Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, I've had a very diverse array of guests, including fundamentalist Christians. I had a porn star who was an atheist. I mean, I've had a whole range of guests, some of which have been a little challenging to interview, but I've risen to the occasion and we've always found common ground.
I love that. And really, it's important for us, I would think, as a listener, it's important for us to hear the different viewpoints, the different ways of life, and, you know, understand each other and maybe not understand, but respect and value people to be able to make their own choices.
Right, and it's my belief that we're all spiritual beings having a human experience who can have a spiritual experience if we let it be.
Yes.
And so even though I've had some atheists on the show, I've been able to help them discover how they actually are spiritual beings, even if they don't believe in God or a traditional higher power or concept of God.
Oh, that is fantastic, because yes, we are all connected.
Yes.
So tell me, David, how do you select your guests?
Well, in the beginning, I had to go and find them. And I was looking for people that had spiritual backgrounds, ministers, authors of spiritual books, people with interesting stories to tell, like recovering addicts and the like. And then as time went on, people started seeking me out. And right now, I'm booking for January. I have people that come to me. And I have a lot of very spiritually gifted people on the show. I have psychics, healers, seers, visionaries. I do have best-selling authors. I have authors like Dr. Bernie Siegel, the cancer surgeon and specialist who maintains that it's not the doctors who do the healing, it is the patients, and it is their belief in their own state of wholeness and the fact that they are not meant to inherit illness and that they can heal from anything.
Yes, yes. Oh, that is beautiful. Your shows, what a great variety and such inspiration.
Well, thank you.
Yes, and something I found with being a radio host, I sit and I say to myself, what a blessing to share these amazing people, these beautiful stories, and, you know, their experiences that others have really are an inspiration for the listeners, because you may have listeners that are going through that same challenge or have those same questions.
Exactly. And so, you know, it is my desire to inspire and uplift people and show them that there is hope, even if they're walking through the valley of darkness, that they can find their way to the light, that there is hope, that they are meant to be divine beings, and that they can achieve that if they just change their thought processes and use the power of their minds in a positive direction.
Yes. The fact that you have shows booked, you know, guests lined up into January, I see that as Source is saying, David, keep doing what you're doing. You're a great energy in the world.
Well, thank you. I consider it a form of service. I don't receive compensation for it. And I do believe that we're all meant in this life, once we've taken care of our own needs, to be of service to our fellow quote-unquote man. And that, you know, no man or woman is an island, that we're all in it together, as you say.
Yes, yes. Oh, I absolutely love that. And a radio show is such a great opportunity to be a vessel of, you know, positive energy and inspiration. I'm so happy that we have connected. I really believe we meet who we're meant to meet, and it's just great to connect with you, David.
Well, thank you. I have a barking dog in the background, so I'm muted for a minute. Oh. Hopefully he won't be interfering.
Yes, yes. Oh, we love those, yes.
Oh, yes. They're spiritual beings, too.
Yes.
It's every aspect of creation.
Oh, aren't they, though? It's mm-hmm. just amazing as we delve into that spirituality, what opens up. When we're going to take a break here for a commercial, but when we come back, I really would love to have you share some of your own spiritual journey with us. I think that would be fascinating for the guests.
I'd be happy to do that.
Wonderful. Well, everyone, we are going to pop out for a commercial. We will be right back with David Clark. Thank you. Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Why Am I So Happy? If you are just joining us, I am here today with David Clark, an amazing man. He has his own radio show. He has such a journey, and he does so much for others, as with his show, with his books. I welcome you back, David.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. I would really love to have you share with us a bit about your own personal spiritual journey. Tell us about your life challenges and coming to terms with what you had to come to terms with and change in your life.
Well, I had a bit of a traumatic childhood that involved having a mentally ill mother, or I should say a mother who was experiencing mental illness. And there was some sexual trauma, too, that I didn't even become aware of until I got into therapy, because I was blocking it, you know. That a lot of survivors do. And my spiritual awakening began when I was about 25, but it was very intermittent, and that's because I fell prey to addiction. And the granddaddy of my addictions was sexual addiction, which was virulent and very difficult to recover from. And I also became an alcoholic along the way. So my recovery began 28 years ago when I stopped drinking. And then I experienced the flip side of depression. I went into mania, and I was diagnosed a few years later as having a bipolar disorder. So that was part of my challenge, too. And every time I came out of an addiction, I would have a mania, which made my life very unmanageable. And it was frightening, and people pulled away from me, and I couldn't understand what was going on. But I persisted and prevailed, and today I can safely drink. I'm a former alcoholic. And I'm learning what is a happy and healthy sexuality for myself after having acted out anonymously with scores of people. Mm-hmm. And that caused me a great deal of shame and guilt because it involved cheating on partners. I've had three life partners, and I'm currently remarried to a man who really is a woman in a man's body. Mm-hmm. So it's been a very interesting journey.
Oh, you're an inspiration. You really are. And what are your challenges now with remaining and being, we'll call it, sexually sober, with having got out of that sexual addiction? What are your challenges?
Well, I'm not totally free. I have been totally free in the past, and by not being totally free, I mean that sometimes I'm subject to euphoric recall, which is like a siren beckoning me to the rocks. So I have to stay out of my head and think with my heart.
Yes, yes. And David, what are the virtues of monogamy?
Well, I think that without monogamy, we cannot truly understand what intimacy is, intimacy with another primary person. And I'm not going to cast judgment on people that are sexually addicted. I certainly can relate to that. I'm not going to exercise a judgment against people who have open relationships. That's their journey and their challenge. But I do believe ultimately, if we're going to achieve intimacy with ourselves and with another and remain true to ourselves, I believe that we need to be monogamous.
Yes, yes. So what would you say to a listener out there who wants to get help with a sexual addiction? What would you recommend that they do?
Well, first of all, I think they need to look at their life and if they're happy. And if they're not happy, I want them to know there's something they can do about it, and that they don't have to do it alone, that they're not alone. And I think the most difficult thing for an addict to do is to recognize that, to overcome denial, and to be willing to reach out for help. And it is a journey. It is not easy, particularly if it's an addiction like sex or food, because those are things that, well, first of all, we need to eat to live, and sex can be part of a happy and healthy life. It's not like putting down a substance that you don't need to have. So that's the main difference. But ultimately, I believe that you need to reach out for help and to know that there's help available for almost any addiction or compulsion out there via 12-step programs, which is the journey I took. And I learned a lot of other tools along the way. In some aspects, I believe that 12-step programs can be limiting because they encourage you to identify yourself as being involved in the addiction. For instance, if you go to an AA meeting, you'll hear people say, "I'm an alcoholic," when in essence, I believe they're either a recovering alcoholic or a reformed alcoholic, as such as I am.
Yes, yes. Yes, I love, yeah. Now, David, how did you become an author as well? What brought you to that? What triggered you to write your books?
Well, I retired rather suddenly when I was having a serious bout of mental illness, and I recognized that to go back into social work once I recovered would be a very stressful thing that could predispose me to further mental illness. So I took a disability retirement, and the first thing that I wanted to do was write my life story to offer hope to others. And this was the precursor to two books, that one of which has come out, that's Occam's Razor Revisited, which is really putting the pieces of my life together along the themes of recovery from severe homophobia, recovery from alcoholism, recovery from sexual addiction, and recovery from mental illness. And now I am working on a revision of that puts it all in chronological order instead of being thematic, and that is a book called Think With Your Heart, which is yet to be released. So when I finished writing that book, I thought, what am I going to do now? And I remembered these stories that I'd created to entertain a colleague when I'd been a social worker, and I started writing a series of books about a naughty nun who likes her bourbon and her Marlboros. The Reverend Mother is a reformed prostitute. The convent chef is a gay cowboy who's a self-described sex maniac. So I wove some themes from my own life into the book, and all the characters are deliciously dysfunctional and point up the fact that we are all subject to human foibles and that we do not need to take them so seriously, but there is help available. And I use the gift of humor to help adult children not take their life so seriously, because I do believe, like the Reader's Digest says, that laughter is the best medicine.
Oh, yes, yes, I'm right there with you. It sure is. Tell us a little bit about your book, The Shades of Gay. What is that about?
Shades of Gay is a cautionary tale. And it shows addiction for what it is. And it's not for the faint of heart, because it really goes into the throes of addiction, and it's somewhat graphic. Well, it's quite graphic at points, but it does have a spiritual message. And what happens is the protagonist, Daniel, has to come to a crossroads in his life before he wakes up to the fact that there's a better way for him. And he is cheating on his partner right along, who is ignorant of what's going on, until evidence surfaces that Daniel is being unfaithful to him. And he gives Daniel an ultimatum that either he shapes up or ships out. So, the story continues on, and it's filled with transitions and transformation. And it's, as I said, it's a cautionary tale, but it's filled with hope that one can recover from anything.
Oh, and that hope is such a gift to give others. I understand, David, a screenplay is being written about one of your books. Tell us about that, please.
Well, it's based on Occam's Razor Revisited, and it's been renamed Think With Your Heart to coincide with the book that's yet to come. And it has been completed, and it was a finalist at the Beverly Hills International Film Festival. It has yet to be made into a movie.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, We just have a few moments left, David. Please share with us any upcoming writing projects and tell the listeners where they can get your books and get information about you.
Well, my books are all available on Amazon.com, and they've all received 5-star reviews, and I'm a little distracted by the dog barking. What was the other part of the question?
How can they find the books and find information about you? Like perhaps share your website information?
Okay, well, they can go to authordavidclark.com and they can find out about all of my books. And as I mentioned, they can get them from Amazon.com. And they can find my radio show, if they want to, at blogtalkradio.com/authordavidclark. And Clark is spelled with an E at the end.
Awesome. I love it. David, as we say goodbye, what last words would you like to share to the listeners today?
I'd like to share that the meaning of life is joy. And that, as Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham, would say, there's nothing more important than maintaining consistent moments of joy. And if you practice awareness, that you can realize when you're starting to slip from that and just climb up the rungs of the ladder. And if you fall all the way to the bottom and go into the pits of despair, reach out for help and climb up one rung at a time. But you don't need to do
it. I love it. Oh, David, I love that. You are inspiration for others. I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Paula.
Oh, this has been absolutely fantastic. I look forward to listening to your radio show. It sounds absolutely fascinating with fascinating guests. And I'm sending you a big hug, and I'm sending your dog a big hug.
Oh, great. And I'm looking forward to having you on my show. I believe it's on December 1st.
Yes, I'm so excited, and I'm so honored that you asked. And I want to say a big thank you to our listeners out there in the U.S. and around the world. Thank you for joining us. Big hugs to everyone and a happy day to everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you, David.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome.